This is Andrea Barber, and you're listening to the Run to the Top podcast. Hello, this is Coach Claire Bartholik, aka The Planted Runner, hosting today's episode of the Run to the Top. I'm super excited about today's show with Andrea Barber. You probably know her best as the zany next-door neighbor on the Netflix hit show Fuller House. And if you don't know her, your kids probably do. The reason I wanted Andrea on the show is not to talk about her acting or to ask her about Hollywood. This is a running podcast, of course. Andrea is a runner, and the sport has completely changed her life for the better. In her new book, Full Circle, Andrea is refreshingly honest and open about her struggles with anxiety and depression and how running helped her through some incredibly difficult times in her life. Like me and so many of you listening, Andrea did not start running as a kid, but found it later in life. Running helped her become strong and confident and realize that she could do hard things. The simple act of going for a run, whether alone or with a friend, brought her much-needed peace and a sense that everything is going to be okay. I hope you'll enjoy this episode as much as I did. And now, here's Andrea Barber. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Andrea. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. I'm so excited to be on this podcast because I'm a listener of your podcast.
Oh, good.
This is very exciting for me.
Oh, good. That makes me feel so good. First of all, how are you doing in this craziness that we are calling quarantine? Are you getting any runs in?
Not a whole lot, actually. There's a lot of runners out there, which is great to see. So many people getting outside and getting exercise and families going for walks or runs or bike rides together. But it is a little bit crowded out there now, and they're starting to shut down some of the bike trails and the running paths. So I'm sticking to the indoors. You know, I've got my treadmill, I've got my Peloton, and so I'm kind of sticking to my indoor equipment right now in order to get my endorphins going, because that seems to be just a safer way to do it. And then I can stay nearby and be with my kids. And that's kind of how I'm doing it right now during quarantine.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Definitely, they've shut all the parks where I live in North Carolina, and so the streets seem more crowded than ever with runners, which is a little strange, but we're getting used to it.
It is strange. I mean, at first I thought this is great. Like, there's so many runners out here that I've never seen before. So many people that have just started taking up running. And so I think initially it was a really great thing. And then now, you know, it's the tide is turning a little bit, and people need to be really following those social distancing rules. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to keep that kind of distance when you're on like a narrow sidewalk or a narrow running path. So, you know, I think people are still sort of navigating those new rules and this new reality that we're in.
Definitely. Well, I would like to ask you first, in your Instagram bio, you describe yourself as a mom, runner, writer, and then Kimmy Gibbler of Fuller House. Would you say those are in order of importance?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it changes according to the season of my life, but being a mom is definitely the most important role that I have. That will never change. That will always be number one. And then being a runner, of course, my seasons, you know, there's some seasons where I'm running a lot and other seasons where I'm not running at all. So that kind of just depends on where I am in life. And being a writer is definitely super high on the list right now, since I'm a newly published author with my book Full Circle that was just published a couple of months ago. And Kimmy Gibbler, that will always be part of my identity, even though it's not, you know, a huge part of my identity personally right now, because we finished filming. We're done with the series completely. So I'm not, you know, I'm not wearing the Kimmy Gibbler wardrobe anymore. I'm not stepping foot into the Tanner house and recreating that character anymore. So unfortunately, sadly, it's not a huge part of my day-to-day identity, but I think I will always be best known as Kimmy Gibbler. So that'll always be part of my bio.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I wanted you on the show to talk about running, of course, because this is a running show. And I didn't realize you were a runner until I read your book. So I definitely wanted to have you on to talk about it. And initially, you started running to get through a difficult time in your life. Can you explain what running gave you at that time?
Absolutely. Running, this was like kismet. Like, running came into my life the same year my marriage was breaking down. It was completely coincidental, but I do believe that maybe there was some sort of divine intervention there, because I had several friends wanting to sign up for the inaugural Tinkerbell Half Marathon at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. And that was, you know, just as a fun run. We wanted to wear tutus and put glitter on and wear, you know, funny makeup and big wings. And it was supposed to be a fun run. And that happened like just a couple of months before my marriage started tanking. So that's what started me running, was just to be social and to, you know, I almost had fear of missing out. I didn't want to miss out on this cool inaugural run with my friends wearing tutus. So it started out like that, but I found so much catharsis through running because of that. And I didn't expect that. I expected to suffer through the training runs, do it, cross the finish line, and then be done and never run again. But something happened out there on that course, and I was just transformed. I mean, a part of it might have been the runner's high, you know, but I really feel like something changed in me on that Tinkerbell half marathon course that day. And I crossed that finish line, and I was just like, how do I make this part of my life forever? Like, it made me feel so good, and it made me feel so strong that I just kept doing it. And then as my marriage started disintegrating and I was going through this horrible, you know, divorce process, which is not fun, even under the best of circumstances, you know, I decided I'm going to run a full marathon now too. And so I was just doing these huge, like 18-mile training runs by myself, and all the sweat and all the suffering and just pounding all of my emotions out through the pavement. It was incredibly cathartic. And I needed that. I never expected to get that from running. You know, I always felt like running was sort of a punishment. You know, it's something you're forced to do in school, or, you know, if you're in a sport, you're forced to run laps. If you do something bad, I don't know. I always figured it was a punishment, not a reward. And after doing that Tinkerbell Half Marathon, it definitely became a reward and something that I got to do, not something that I had to do. And yeah, so I ran. I trained for a full marathon during all of those months I was going through a divorce, and I needed that. That was probably one of my best therapies at the time, because it exhausted me of all of my anxiety and depression. Well, not all of it, but it exhausted a lot of those negative emotions out of me. And it provided that mental clarity that I needed, that, you know, problems that seemed really insurmountable before the run suddenly seemed more manageable once I was done with the training run. And it made me feel stronger, you know, running made me feel like I could do hard things. And that became a huge metaphor in my life. You know, I could physically do hard things, and I could do mentally and emotionally hard things too. So yeah, running became a lifeline for me during that time.
Yeah, I definitely can relate. My story is a little bit similar to yours, because I also really, really got into running, and then my marriage fell apart, kind of the same thing.
Oh, wow.
And I really used running as a sense of control, because, you know, everything was falling apart, but the one thing I could do and I could do well was run. Oh, and so I really can relate to what you were going through. I mean, our details are a little bit different, but I think that running can be such a powerful thing, and it's amazing. It's just putting one foot in front of the other, but it teaches us so much. So I really got a lot out of your book, that part of the emotional part about running and how it really can give you a sense of control when everything's falling apart.
That's great. And you're right about it being so simple, just putting one foot in front of the other. You don't have to have any formal training. You know, you don't have to join a team and you don't have to join a gym. You just, all you need are shoes. Like yeah. that's all you need are shoes. And yeah. anybody can start at any age. Like I never ran before I was, what was this? Probably 30, 35 when I started running. Like I never did any sort of physical activity or sport. You know, I came to running very late in life, and that's one of the great things about it is you can pick it up at any time.
Absolutely. And it's often said that that running is a form of therapy, but running really can't be the entire solution to mental health issues. And you know that firsthand. Could you Absolutely. Talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Running was a huge part of my therapy when I was going through the divorce, but obviously it didn't solve all of my problems. It was just one of my big outlets. But doing a traditional form of therapy also was very important, you know, to learn about the aspects of my personal anxiety and depression and how it manifested itself in my body and in my brain, and how to develop the skills I needed to cope with such a difficult time in my life. So I've had the same therapist for over 10 years. She's fantastic. You know, I see her depending on what season of life I'm in. If I'm going through a difficult period, I'll see her every week. And then sometimes I'll go several months without seeing her if I'm not struggling with anything in particular. So, and she's the one that first suggested to me, she was like, you need to do something physical, you know, whether that's playing basketball or, you know, doing bar classes or yoga, or, you know, you just have to do something physical. And so she's kind of the first person that planted that idea in my head. So yeah, talk therapy was great. Meditation is something I came to more recently. I didn't meditate for a long time because I didn't want to be alone with my thoughts. That sounded very scary. So just in the last couple of years, I started practicing meditation, and now I do it every day because I found so much value in it. And it is a practice. It's something, it's like a muscle. You have to exercise it in order to make it stronger. And so now, you know, I still have uncomfortable thoughts, but I've learned how to sit with them and how to let those thoughts pass without judgment. And yeah, I have found enormous value in meditating. Whereas I think if you had asked me this question, you know, even 5 years ago, I would have been like, meditation, no, how can that help me? But I have found enormous value in that. And then medication also, you know, I'm on medication now. I haven't always been, but I'm very open about it because I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed about it. But yeah, medication is another thing that I really needed. At the time I started taking medication was actually when I had postpartum depression. That was the first time I started taking medication to manage my anxiety and depression at the time. And then I went back on it again during my divorce. And so, you know, I think having an open and honest relationship with your therapist and your psychiatrist is really important to determine whether you need to be on medication or if you can not be on medication. You know, I think for some people, it's not a choice. They have to be on medication every single day. And for other people, it might be a seasonal thing. And so whatever the case may be, you know, I applaud anybody who is taking care of their mental health and is not afraid to talk about what helps them. And so for me, right now, that's medication, meditation, talk therapy, and running. All yeah. of those things. I need all of those things in my toolkit in order to stay mentally healthy.
Yeah, because you can't just run 20 miles a day. You can't run it all out.
No, you need to have you can't.
I mean, some people can maybe, but not for that long.
Exactly.
Well, we talked a little bit about how running is great because you can just put on a pair of shoes and go out and run. But you also talked a little in your book about how great it is to share running with other people. And especially, you know, you said you trained with a friend for some of your races. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that special bond running with somebody else?
Yeah. The social aspect of running was also a surprise to me because I'm an introvert, and I loved running alone because of the catharsis, and I needed that time to just turn off my brain and just empty my brain. So, you know, I'm mostly a solo runner, but I did train for one particular half marathon with my friend April. And at first it was just like, oh, this is fun. We're moms, you know, we're getting time away from the kids. Let's go out and run a couple of miles together. But the more we ran together, the more we started sharing the personal and emotional aspects of our lives. You know, she also was a single mom, and she went through a tragedy in her life, not a divorce, but her husband died, her first husband died. And so, you know, we had these shared experiences of loss and grief and, you know, the struggles of single motherhood. And I would just find myself crying during these runs. There's something about running with another person and sharing the physical pain of training runs, but also this shared like emotional pain. I found myself opening up in ways with this friend that I had never done before with any other friend. And I really think the running part played a huge part in my ability to open up with her, and similarly her ability to open up with me. I can't explain why, but yeah, it was just this very special shared experience. And I began to look forward to these runs. It was less about training for the half marathon, and it was more about, you know, this therapy time together between me and my friend April. I just have such fond memories of that. And we talk still about, oh, we got to find another half marathon that we can train for together just so we can have an excuse to have this special time together. It's really unlike, you know, I could go for a coffee with her and sit at a local Starbucks, and it wouldn't be the same as right. going for a run with her. There's something that the movement brings out of us. I don't know. I don't know if I'm explaining, if I'm even explaining this right, but.
No, I think you are. It's also, I think, running next to someone side by side. You're not looking at them in the face. You're just sort of next to someone. You're breathing the same. Your steps usually start to coincide with each other. And it's just, you kind of get on the same, I don't know, wavelength. It's really special.
It is very special. And it used to stress me out. For a long time, I avoided running with people because I was embarrassed about my pace, you know, and I'm not a fast runner. I've never have been. And so I would stress out and I'd be like, I can't keep up. What if I can't talk and run at the same time? And so I avoided social running for such a long time. And then it wasn't until I did this training, these training runs with April that I, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your pace is. It's just a matter about, it just matters connecting with that person and
absolutely
and doing it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why I stressed out about it for so long, but.
Oh, you're not the only one. I don't think it matters even if you're a really fast runner. Everybody gets that pace anxiety, and we compare ourselves to the other person and we think we're always too slow, no matter if you're one of the fastest in the world, you know? It's all relative. Exactly. Yeah. Well, speaking of, you talked earlier about races, and you certainly don't need to sign up for a race to be a runner. What do you like about racing, and what do you not like about it?
I like doing races. It's all social for me. Like I don't, mm-hmm. like I said, I'm not a fast runner, so I don't race to race. Like I don't, you know, I'm not going to be one of those, you know, front of the pack people ever. So for me, it's not about speed. I do it because it's an excuse to take a vacation and travel somewhere I haven't been and meet up with friends. You know, I have this huge community of runner friends, and we're spread out all across the country. And this is a great excuse. You know, we usually go to San Diego every June to run the Rock and Roll San Diego Half Marathon together. And that's kind of like our yearly chance to catch up and run together. And it's always a fun run, you know, and that's what really draws me to races. It's been several years since I ran a race to be fast, but in those instances, it was always just to beat myself. Like I've never tried to race to beat other people, but I would always try to race to PR. or best my time. Racing for me has never been about racing. It's been about connecting with other people. That's what I find the value in, and meeting other people too. And just, it's so great being around, well, not in this day and not today, not in this day and age, but being around hundreds of other people who are running with you. And again, sharing this experience, it's very cool to find your tribe and to spend a couple of hours running with them. It's a very unique feeling. And yeah, I love it. It's great. I look forward to the day when more races are on the calendar. I know that a lot have been canceled for the next several months. So,
well, more people are getting out and running these days. Do you have any advice for someone who is just like straight off the couch and ready to lace up?
I would say my best advice is that it's okay to take walk breaks. I think a lot of people think, oh my gosh, I can't run 3 miles. I can't do this. And I thought, well, you don't have to just lace up and go run 3 miles. Like, you can lace up and run until it hurts and then walk for a minute and then run again. You know, that there's no shame in that. And you can do those formal, Jeff Galloway run walk programs. If you're a structured person who needs like a program, there's programs out there that you can use. I've done some of them, using my Garmin watch that'll beep when I'm supposed to walk and then when I'm supposed to run. But, you don't even need that. Like, if you're an unstructured person, you can just, that's how I learned to run. Like, I would just run until it hurt. And then I walked until I felt better. And then I would run again. And that's how I eventually built up the endurance where I could run without having to take a walk break. I think it's a great way to start, and it's very, very simple. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Yeah. No, I love that advice. I love that advice for beginners and people coming back from injury. I tell people to walk, run all the time. Let the ego go.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's okay to walk because you're actually going to be able to run more that day if you break it up. Exactly. With some walks. So great advice. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your first marathon. The story is so relatable and so funny in the book. What did you learn most about yourself on that day?
Oh man, that was such a great day. Like, I still get chills when I think about my first marathon. It was the Nike Women's Marathon in San Francisco, a race that no longer exists, unfortunately. But yeah, that was just, again, that was a race I signed up for and trained for almost as a reaction to the divorce I was going through. I just thought, oh, I am getting divorced. I'm going to go run a full marathon. It was like this visceral reaction to getting a divorce. And so, yeah, the training part was very difficult, but race day, man, that was wonderful and horrible and all of the above. It was a magical day. You know, there was, there's a point where, the half marathoners and the marathoners run together for, I think, the first 11 miles. But then when we broke off and the full marathoners broke off into their own path through Golden Gate Park, there were just a few of us around and it was like misting lightly and you could hear birds. It was so quiet. And I just remember feeling just this transcendental, wonderful, peaceful feeling. It was awesome. And then, I hit mile 18 and all of that peaceful feeling went away. And it just became like this death march of people trying to get through, the last several miles. And I think I describe in the book how Nike had put up this huge jumbotron to show the runners going around like this curve in the road. And I just thought, this isn't inspiring. This looks like a death march. Like, it's just, it's just horrible. And then the last, the last 6 miles of that race are along the Great Highway, what they call the Great Highway in San Francisco. And I started calling it the Not So Great Highway because it was just a long stretch of road with like nothing to look at. There was no spectators. There was like one lonely volunteer passing out water. it was just, it was awful. And that I totally hit the wall. You know, I hit the wall. I felt like the miles were getting longer, you know, everything I think that first time marathoners are experiencing, where I'm just like, how are these miles actually getting longer? Like, it doesn't seem possible. And then I remember, you know, coming into the finisher shoot, suddenly there's tons of people there. You know, they're there and they're cheering you on. And I saw a couple of my friends who snapped an incredible photo of me right before I finished. I crossed the finish line. And then I remember thinking, approaching the finish line, I was thinking, oh, thank God, I never have to run again once I cross this finish line. But then I crossed the finish line and I just started crying because I thought, I did this. Like, I never thought I could actually do this. I hoped, you know, starting the race and doing the training, I thought, God, I hope I can make it through an actual 20, because you don't actually run 26 miles until you do the race. You know, you go up to 20 or 22 during the training. But I thought, you know, I really hope I can do this and not have to quit or get injured or give up. But crossing the finish line, I just cried because I thought, I did this. I'm stronger than I thought I was. And suddenly I just started thinking not about everything that I had lost in my life, you know, my marriage and my husband and all of the grief, like all of that went away. And it just, I became hyper-focused on everything that I had gained throughout this experience, such as confidence and strength and resilience and endurance. And I just became overjoyed with all of those positive feelings. And it brought me to tears because it was so moving. It was the best feeling. It was one of the best days of my life and one of the hardest days physically of my life, but, emotionally, you know, I get chills thinking about it still.
Yeah. Because
it was a transformative moment in my life.
Isn't it amazing that the things you tell yourself in the race when you're hurting so bad, I'm never going to run again. And then yet you go sign up for another one.
Yeah, usually the same day. Usually you go that night. You're in pain, but you're like, when's the next one? It's amazing.
One of my favorite parts in Full Circle was where you say you wish there was an it's okay to be average movement. What do you mean by that?
Well, this speaks to my anxiety and embarrassment over my slow pace. I think looking through Instagram and social media in general, I've noticed this trend of people who are, you know, they're out there to try to prove that they're the best or the baddest, or they're, you know, they're doing the most, the hardest workouts or the most cross training or the, you know, so there's that. And I've also noticed that people who post pictures of their watches post run are usually people who are pretty fast. I mean, fast to me. And I thought, why don't I see like the 12-minute milers posting pictures of their watches? Like, you don't see that. And I'm like, why don't we see that? You know, because they're like me, they're embarrassed. They're like, oh, 12-minute miles, that's nothing to really brag about. So I post a picture of it. And I suddenly started thinking, well, why? Like, why as a culture, as a running culture, do we do that? Why do we only celebrate the fast paces and not the slow paces? Because, you know, the slow runners are still runners and they're still out there challenging themselves and they're still growing. You know, it doesn't matter if you're running 12-minute miles or 9-minute miles or 7-minute miles or 4-minute, you know, it doesn't matter. You're still growing. And
absolutely.
And challenging yourself. So I wish there was an it's okay to be average. You don't have to be the toughest or, you know, the best badass out there. You don't have to be the fastest. It's okay just to get up and lace up and go out there and get it done regardless of your pace. And so
absolutely.
I wish that was a movement, and I wish more 12-minute milers would post their watches. And I, you know, I'm guilty of that too. I don't post a picture of my watch, probably because I'm afraid of the nasty trolls that are going to make comments, you know, on an Instagram post. But I wish that was more accepted. And yeah. I should start that movement.
Yes, you should. Yes, you should.
I should. You're right.
Like and
I,
now that it's out there, you're going to have to.
You're right. You're gonna have to hold me accountable to this.
I will. Okay. Well, we are getting close to the home stretch here, Andrea. So I'm going to ask you a few questions that I ask everybody.
Oh, great.
First of all, if you could go back and talk to yourself when you first started running, what advice would you give yourself?
I would tell myself that it would change my life. Like I wouldn't have believed it when I first laced up and went for my first run walk or trained for my first half marathon. I didn't believe that it would change my life. I thought it was going to be one and done. So I would tell myself that it will change your life, and that pain is temporary, but that pride lasts forever.
Great. Oh, I love that. What's the greatest gift running has given you?
Oh man. Do I have to pick just one?
You know, you can have two or three. It's fine.
Well, aside from all of the, you know, confidence and strength that running has given me, I think the greatest gift it's given me is my boyfriend, and, who's also a runner, and my friendship circle. Because my friends that I've met through running are, you know, some of the best people I've ever met in my life, and my boyfriend is one of them. I met him as part of this running group, and we've been together for over 5 years now. And
congratulations.
Oh, thanks. but yeah, some of our first dates were running dates. You know, we would run to, you know, Santa Monica Beach and run along the beach. And it was just, like you said, a great way to connect with people. And you don't have to look each other in the eye. It's not awkward. It's just, a shared experience. And I never would have met him if I wasn't a runner. So I would say that's the greatest gift running has given me.
Awesome. And where can our listeners connect with you?
Oh, gosh. Probably Instagram is the best way. I'm at Andrea Barber on Instagram. I'm on Twitter occasionally, too, sporadically, but I'm at Andrea Barber on there, too. I also have a Facebook page, but I'm rarely there. So you can visit it, but I'm not really there that often. So probably Instagram or Twitter is the best place to get in contact with me.
Oh, perfect. And we'll put all of that in our show notes so that people can connect with you.
Great.
Well, Andrea, I wish we could talk for like another hour. I'm enjoying myself so much. I really appreciate having you on the show. I think you're super relatable as far as that so many runners have started with a similar story. And I really think that people are going to get a lot out of this. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to be here. And I appreciate you having me on here. You know, I'm not an elite runner. I'm not a fast runner. But I, like you said, I hope I bring something to the show because people can relate to being, you know, a woman in her 40s who took up running, you know, late in life and will never be fast, but still gains so much out of running. So thank you for having me.
Okay, so we all need to make Andrea accountable for starting the It's Okay to Be Average movement. I would love to see more posts of those 12-minute miles out there, or whatever your happy pace is. I know I've fallen into the comparison trap of not feeling fast enough or not feeling like I worked out hard enough, which is just so ridiculous, especially in times like these. If you run, you're a runner. If you run and then walk and then run, you are still a runner. I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people should be celebrating what running is to them and not so much what others might think of a number on a watch. If you enjoyed this episode, I need to ask you a really quick favor. Please drop a review on iTunes and tell the world what you think. It only takes a couple of minutes, but it means the world to me and the ability to make this show. And that's it for this week of the Run to the Top. I'll be back with another fresh episode next week. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.